Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Hakeem v. Accenture. Ms. Perry?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mary Perry and I represent Mr. Omar Hakeem. ERISA put the burden on employers, like Accenture, to enlighten its employees about significant plan changes, not on the employees to be on the lookout for big changes. Yet that's exactly how the burdens have shifted in this case. Accenture failed to provide information required by ERISA, but it contends it is off the hook in this case because it managed to keep Mr. Hakeem in the dark until after he signed the release.
But, Ms. Perry, why wasn't the individualized benefits statement that he received in 2000 sufficient to establish his constructive notice? Because that statement says that by virtue of his current job, the job classification, he's no longer eligible to participate in the retirement plan. Why doesn't that do it? I think that's sort of the bottom line here.
I have several responses, if you'll let me get to them.
No.
But the first one is that it's not relevant under Lynn. Lynn is really looking at documents that are close in time. All right? And the district court didn't even consider it relevant to the Lynn and Howell issue. The motion to reconsider didn't consider it relevant to the Lynn and Howell issue. It did not argue about the 2000 statement with respect to the Lynn and Howell issue, only with respect to the arising after language in the release. So that's one point. It's not relevant. The second point is that Accenture has lifted two sentences from a document. Mr. Hakeem was not given the document. He was not given the two sentences. He was given a document, and I really encourage the court to look at that document. If you look at that page, there's a pie chart. There are numbers. That's where the reader's attention is drawn, not this small print. And now let me get to the ambiguities about that statement, Your Honor. First of all, it's incorrect. It says if the retirement plan means, as Accenture contends, the defined pension benefit, it's incorrect because it says that he's not a participant. And he is a participant, although he's not further accruing benefits. He remains a participant to this day. So it's inaccurate, so that's misleading. The footnote on that page says or suggests that there are retirement plan estimates on that page or in that document. Again, confusing. Maybe the retirement plan is the 401k plan that's discussed on that page. The retirement plan is not defined anywhere. So the burden was on Accenture. Congress made that decision to put the burden on Accenture. Instead, the burden is shifted to Mr. Hakeem with this unclear document, all right? It's not about the defined pension benefit plan. That's plain. It's about the 401k and the defined contribution plan. So in other words, he was supposed to know there was an Easter egg hidden in this document.
Well, the Easter egg said, quote, because of your current employment classification, you are ineligible to participate in the retirement plan.
And that's incorrect.
Is that the Easter egg?
Your Honor, that's an incorrect statement, in fact, as it pertains to the defined pension benefit, because he is a participant in the plan. So it's actually putting a substantial burden on Mr. Hakeem to, one, find this sentence in a document that's not about the defined pension benefits, two, understand it. Let's keep in mind, Accenture has a lot of attorneys at its disposal. It was in the driver's seat all the time. It could have written a clear document. It could have told him when he was transferring positions, hey, you're losing your defined pension benefit. It didn't tell him that. It didn't comply with Section 204H.
And do you think that would have been clearer than because of your current employment classification, you are ineligible to participate in the retirement plan?
Well, the retirement plan isn't even defined, Your Honor, so we don't know what it is. And the footnote suggests that it might even be something that's described in the document. The burden should be on Accenture, not on the employee, because Congress put that burden on Accenture. It did that because it gave tax benefits to employers who decide to create ERISA plans. And in exchange, employers promised or committed to certain obligations, including providing notice. These notice
promoted.
Requirements...
He was promoted, what, in 96?
1999, Your Honor.
What was 96? That was when supposedly this... New
yes, Your Honor. The plan supposedly changed in 1996.
So he was promoted in 99.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were some negotiations at the time he was promoted, going back and forth about when he started and
exactly.
all that sort of thing. It would seem that there would be some acknowledgement or discussion that, along with this pay increase, you're also going into another category. Never?
You're right,
up?
Your Honor. You would think that, wouldn't you? But
well,
it didn't
I
occur
would think
here.
If I'm getting a promotion and I change in pay, I would look at it with some scrutiny. I guess what you're saying is he would have been better off to turn down the promotion.
Well, what Mr. Hakim says in his declaration is that, one, he would have negotiated more with his employer. Probably tried to obtain a little bit more compensation to adjust. You know, this affected his retirement substantially. $1,200 a month for life starting at age 62. That's a big financial hit. He could have tried to negotiate more compensation. He could have planned differently for his retirement if he had realized, hey, I'm not getting that extra $1,200 a month that I thought I would have obtained. So,
well, when you look at this, the document that Judge Rovner was referring to, it's a lot of small print, but it's there. And the question is, what did he do with this? What did he think when he got this? When you look at it, normally when people look at these things fairly carefully, now he admits he didn't get an attorney, but he's a smart guy. He thought he could understand things.
But the document is, and I really encourage you to look at it, it really is about
right
the 401k.
We've looked at
the 401k plan and the defined contribution plan. And if you look at that page, the pie chart and the column on the right with the numbers, I mean, this is where the attention is drawn. Indeed, when Mr. Hakim got a statement of his benefits in July 2003, he called almost immediately. The numbers told him there was a problem. We have evidence of email communications with Accenture that by August 2003, he had already contacted them. As soon as he saw numbers, he understood what was going on.
And that was before he signed the release?
That was after. Now, they could have provided a statement of his benefits with his release because the information needed to make that statement of benefits was already fixed because it's years of service and compensation. According to Accenture, that got fixed in 1999. So they knew they were going to lay him off. They could have provided a release. There were so many opportunities when Accenture could have let Mr. Hakim know. And Congress expects that of the employers like Accenture.
Does the record reflect the educational level of Mr. Hakim?
He's an educated individual, and we don't dispute that fact.
What is the educational level?
I believe he has a bachelor's. I know he has a bachelor's degree. I'm not sure if he has advanced degrees beyond that. But Congress has made a policy choice that it wants to make it easy for employers and employees to know what's happening. This was not a minor plan change. This was a significant plan change. Therefore, it triggered Section 1054H. Indeed, it is undisputed here that Accenture did need to comply with 204H.
You know, you say in your reply brief that when Judge Dow found constructive notice based on the 2000 benefit statements, he was not finding constructive notice for the purposes of the Lynn analysis. And I would like you to expand on that because I'm not sure I fully understand that the distinction that you were making. Although I will tell you, you know, trying to harmonize how and Lynn can make one's head spin.
Yes. Well, Your Honor, there are several reasons. First of all, the court had concluded its Howell and Lynn analysis before it got to the section where it talks about the 2000 statement. And we know that because it had already concluded it was a contested claim. That's essentially saying that there was constructive notice. So it concluded that based on the similarity of the release in Howell to the release here. The other reason we know that is there was this open issue that hadn't been addressed about the language of the statute, the arising after the execution of the release, and that those claims that arose after were not released. That issue wasn't addressed at all in the motion for summary judgment because the district court didn't need to reach that issue. Now, if that last section isn't about that language of the contract and interpreting it and deciding whether or not that exception applies, then the district court completely skipped that issue.
No, the
and
district court did not.
It did
skip
not skip that issue. You're right, Your Honor. That's what that section is about. It's about that issue.
Well,
and I don't.
I know. I mean, you're arguing that Lynn imposes a higher standard for finding constructive knowledge than Judge Dow applied in this case. Right?
Correct, Your Honor. And that's because of Section 1056. And that's why Lynn and Howell are different. Howell, the parties didn't point out 1056, and the court understandably didn't consider it.
So
but
do
Lynn
you agree,
did.
Would you agree that, excuse me, that the court's decision in Howell is comparable, is based on facts that are comparable to these facts?
I'm not sure that I would agree with that because, you know, if we look at the Howell factors, one of them is potentially it would include misleading or being unclear about, you know, what's going on. And since Accenture had not provided 204H notice, I think that would be relevant to the Howell factors. The clarity of the release is not the same here as it was in Howell because it doesn't mention ERISA, it doesn't mention the plan. So I wouldn't agree that they are similar. But in any event, Lynn is the correct decision. It's been the law of this circuit for 30 years. It imposes a very strict standard. And that's the correct standard because Section 1056 makes pension benefits almost sacrosanct. Judge Posner explained in Licciardi that, you know, a release is effectively sale of your pension benefit in exchange for cash.
Ms. Perry, speaking about the release, didn't the release suggest that Mr. Hakim consult an attorney?
It said that he could consult an attorney, yes, Your Honor. But that's been the case.
Did it advise him to, not that he could, but certainly that's a right. Oh. He would have it in any event. Didn't this release actually advise him to?
As did the release in Lynn, as did the release
no, I
in.
Understand.
Yes,
but the answer is yes.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And in the cases in
well,
footnote 5.
Would reflect the kind of income he had at the time this release was?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
I'm just trying to see his financial status, if the record reflects it, at the time it was advised to contact an attorney, because that might have played into his thinking. Do we know?
I'm not sure that the record reflects that. Certainly this release, the statement that he got after his signed the release showed his compensation in the 1999 time period.
What was his position?
He was a senior manager when he was terminated.
A senior manager at Anderson? I'm sorry, a senior manager in accounting?
In a consulting group. mm-hmm. In a consulting group at Accenture.
What did that have to do with Anderson, Arthur Anderson?
Pardon me?
What was the connection? Or is there
I don't...
With Enron and all that stuff going on.
Oh, no, I don't believe he was in accounting, if that's what you're asking, Your Honor.
Okay, well, so when this release came along, there was a reduction in force.
Yes, right? Yes, Your Honor.
And I,
yes.
I'm just
yes,
wondering if he had any choice when the release came along.
Oh, no, Your Honor. He had been terminated. So, I mean, yes, you know, he's an individual who walked into work that day and was told, you no longer have a job. So, yes, he was definitely caught off guard and didn't, you know.
And if he didn't sign the release, what would have happened?
Well, he would have lost some compensation that he would have received.
So there was a lump sum of some kind?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. It was a lump sum. So, I'm sorry. I talked through my reserve time. I definitely want to reserve the minute, Your Honor. Oh, am I up completely?
No. That just indicates you're getting close. But
okay.
Did you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I did want to reserve three. Was my white light already on? Okay.
Well, I can check right now for you.
It was.
You have
right.
A minute left.
I'd like to reserve that.
Surely. Thank you, Ms. Perry. Mr. Cascari?
May it please the Court. My name is Mark Cascari. Along with my co-counsel, Barbara Browski, I represent the appellee. Judge Flam, in response to your question about Mr. Hakeem's education, at the time he signed his release, he had an Associate of Science degree in pre-engineering, a Bachelor of Science degree in Applied Mathematics with a minor in Electrical Engineering. And that was before he signed his release. In 2004, he had a Master's degree in Technology Commercialization. So he was studying for that at the time.
By then, according to you, it's too late. So.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. However, he was obviously studying for his Master's. He signed his release in 2003, and there's evidence in the record that he was continuing his education. Those, by the way, those references that I make can be found at record 144-1, page 6. In response to your question about his salary, at the time of his promotion in 1999, his salary was $167,000, and that's at record 144-1, page 3. Subsequent to his promotion in 1999, he was promoted from manager to senior manager before he actually signed his release. The point being, which I think the court is recognizing when it asks the question about this, Judge Flam, is that he was a sophisticated individual. And the release did advise him to seek advice of counsel. He was sophisticated. He had financial resources to do so.
Of course, the release that he signed didn't say anything about benefits, let alone retirement benefits.
Well, Your Honor,
is that a problem for us?
Well, no, because if you look at the language of the release, it said quite a bit. It said that it is a discharge of any claims relating to Accenture affiliates, fiduciaries, Your Honor. And the key language in the release is the last line of it that says all other statutory common law or other claims of any nature whatsoever. And then the release goes on to say what's not covered, and it doesn't apply to claims concerning breach of the agreement or claims arising after you signed the agreement. It doesn't say anything about ERISA claims being excluded. The point is, these facts are undisputed. If you put yourself in the shoes of this individual, this plaintiff, he is being called, and Judge Mannion, he had a choice. He could have chose not to sign the release. And he's called in, and he says, if you sign this release, you will receive certain benefits. And at that point in time, he's also told the release covers any claim whatsoever. He's a sophisticated individual. He has financial means. He's going to receive remuneration for the release. He's advised to consult the lawyer. So there is, within the meaning of Lynn, a contestable claim. And the reason is because he's presented with these facts at the time he signs his release. Any person in that circumstance, if he wanted to preserve any claim, would consult counsel.
How old was he at the time?
Your Honor, he signed, mid-40s, late-40s.
When he signed the release?
Yes.
Well, it's been a long time since I was in my mid-40s. But at some point, you're pretty optimistic about when you have this kind of talent, you're going to get another job. I don't know what the job markets were right at that time. And maybe there wasn't much of a concern. You know, you're going to get another job and you're going to do stuff and make a lot of money. I don't know anything about him. But is there some reason at the time he signed the release that this was not the end zone, obviously?
Well, in addition to receiving severance benefits, he received transition benefits. That was part of the release.
And you mean a lump sum of some kind. I guess, is that what you mean by transition benefits?
No, and transition benefits in addition to the lump sum severance payment. So there were benefits to help him transition to a new job in addition to.
So yeah. help him find a new job.
Right,
okay,
which he did. What we do know that the job market back in 2003 was better than it is now, certainly. And we do know as well that he was highly skilled and he was involved in technology. And we certainly know that technology is a growing field. We know all those facts. So he did have a choice. He could have decided not to sign a release and pursue his whatever claims he had prior to signing the release. To get back to Judge Rovner's point at the outset of the argument, what is critical about this case and what distinguishes it from Lynn is the fact that he had a benefit statement that was individualized to him and said, you are no longer eligible to participate in the retirement plan. If counsel is saying that he continued his participation and that it should have said you're eligible to participate, but you're no longer accruing benefits. You know, I would argue that by saying you're no longer eligible to participate, the notice that's given to him that he's not participating, he's not accruing benefits, is even greater. He's told, you're out of this plan. And in the Lynn case, by contrast, there was no individualized benefit statement until after the signing of the release. And what's at issue in this case is not the computation of his benefits under the retirement plan. That's not what's at issue. So the fact that he got a statement saying numerically what his benefits are after the release is really not what this case is about. What this case is about is he's challenging his ineligibility to accrue benefits in the retirement plan. And that was precisely what he was notified about in his individualized benefit statement. Now, the other backdrop to that are the summary plan descriptions.
Do you think our decision in Lynn imposes a more demanding standard for finding constructive notice than that which Judge Dow applied?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think Judge Dow found correctly that the issue really is a contested claim within the meaning of Lynn is whether or not the individual has actual or constructive notice. The plaintiffs in their the plaintiff rather in his brief adopted that standard. So the standard of Lynn is actual or constructive notice. The standard of Judge Dow is the same, and the plaintiffs themselves in the appellant brief adopted actual or constructive notice. So that is, everyone at the table agrees that that's the standard. So the question is, when he's signing this release, does he have actual or constructive notice of his claim that he continued to accrue benefits in the retirement plan? And 3 years prior, he's told, you are participating in the plan. And he received summary plan descriptions, as did everyone else who participated in the plan, in 1997, in 1999, and in 2001. And those summary plan descriptions say, if you transfer out of your service line, you're out. You're not going to accrue benefits anymore in the plan. He transferred out of the service line in 1999.
I'm a little confused about that, because in 1996 is the so-called email that he never got. Is that correct? Is that what he
said? Well, that's an issue of fact.
I know.
Yes,
I'm just trying to get a timeline here.
96.
So apparently others got it. Nobody else. They found a couple of people that still had a copy of it, I guess. And then in 99, he gets this promotion. And I just wondered, when you get this promotion into an area that is not covered, I guess you get pay raise and other things, but your opponent would say, well, he would have further negotiated. It just seems that there is everybody with blinders on, doesn't realize what's going on in the company, that when you get promoted into these areas, you're not going to have the benefits?
There's no record evidence of what he was told, what he said during those promotion negotiations, and his testimony that I would have tried to get something more. That's just his.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out why this. Somebody goes in and is blinded by it, doesn't know this. I don't know. It may be something that's standard in the industry, but it seems to me when somebody's going into an area where you're not getting benefits, and they're, whatever this 96 notice said, I just wondered, apparently it's irrelevant. It just seems to me there should be some discussion among people who work there that might come up.
Well, there is discussion in the form of the summary plan descriptions for 1999. That's the backdrop to the whole discussions in 1999. We have a summary plan description in 1999. We got one in 1997. It says if you transfer out of your service line, you're out of this plan. You're not out of the 401k plan, mind you. I mean, that's a different plan. And then subsequent to that, you know, on the heels of that discussion, we have this benefit statement that says you're out. And it also says, you know, the statement itself, the first page says these are your benefits, plural. And it says right after the statement that you're out of the plan, if you have questions, contact Anderson Consulting and get clarification on whatever question that you have. So all that's going on. There is a discussion happening. And the other thing to keep in mind is ERISA requires certain, or it contains certain disclosure rules for summary plan descriptions. They're not under attack here. The plaintiff is not saying the summary plan description did not contain full disclosure. ERISA requires that you put the amendment procedure in the plan and it be in writing, and the plaintiffs are not saying that the plan was amended improperly. Accenture, Anderson Consulting reserved the right to amend the plan. And there's nothing in ERISA that says that this benefit statement is wrong. I mean, there's clear disclosure rules about what needs to be in certain things. The plaintiffs don't argue that any of the ERISA disclosure rules were violated with respect to the individualized benefit statement that he received that told him he's out of the plan that he's now claiming after the release he is entitled to be in. And Your Honor, those facts are really what this case is about. They're distinguished from the Lynn case. And unless this court has any further questions, I think that the court should affirm the decision and the judgment of Judge Dowd. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Berry?
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, he was 39. Mr. Hakim was 39 when he signed the release. At that point in time, we often don't think about retirement benefits at that age. Secondly, I would like to point out that we won on Lynn. The district court denied summary judgment when it considered Lynn. The error in this case occurred when the court thought that Howell somehow changed Lynn. And I think it's pretty clear that Howell didn't change Lynn. So the understanding of Lynn by this district court was that the 2000 statement was not relevant. And that conclusion is correct. I also want to emphasize that the burden was on Accenture to provide 204H notice. And it's pretty clear that they did violate it. The statute at the time required written notice. The regulations solely talked about paper notice. It's undisputed that they only used email. It's undisputed that they sent it to a list of people who they never checked to see who was on the list. It's undisputed that they can't say now who was on the list and who received the email. It's undisputed that on Thursday this email was sent out to the other offices and that within 24 hours they were supposed to turn it around and send it out the door. Really, there was very little care taken by Accenture in how it was distributing that 204H notice. And now, even though it had the time to plan for that, it faults Mr. Hakim, an individual who didn't have the time to plan and who walks into work and is told he no longer has a job. Accenture had the opportunity to craft better documents that were clearer. Even its summary plan descriptions are not at all clear. It had all the time in the world. It was in the driver's seat, not Mr. Hakim. And yet it seems to be asking this court to hold Mr. Hakim to a higher standard than it holds itself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel.